So I went to show you a story to place of flight. Every time I fly back to America, I always think it's like that. I would meet fascinating people. I'm not sure if it's just Hashem sticks the most interesting people next to me. But, you know, on my most recent flight, I sat next to somebody fascinating also. The guy from California who is flying out to Israel to learn counter-terrorist type of, you know, homeland protection stuff for America. He's going to be trained by Israelis. I'm like, how are you going to learn? He's like, I don't know. I'm hoping in English. Like, the only way I know is Shalom. So, take me a long time. Anyhow, I sat next to this guy on the way to America, to Israel. That's fascinating. But my previous trip, when I went back to America, I met two interesting people. I thought it was a fascinating experience. I was flying in for Thanksgiving to, like, run a quick Shabbos program, Shabbat home, and I was sitting next to these two guys who were flying in for their mother's 60th birthday. They had a quick trip also. One of them gives shir. He's a magic shir in the Mir Yeshiva. He gives a chabur there. And one is a Rosh Kolel. There's a kolel called Minchat Yitzchak. I don't know exactly what that is and where that is. It's a small little kolel. I think he told me they learn Tokos Brachos in tremendous depth. They've been doing it for like 2 or 3 years, which really is a long time to be learning the six parak of Brachos and all those halachas. So I think they're doing a really in-depth study of it, but that or a tremendous amount of batala. In any event, you know, so I was having a nice conversation with him. I told him, I was saying, you know, I wanted to give shir on a few topics, and I was listening to their shir, and I gave some, and I said, I love the shir, and some hashkafic shir, and they were giving the halachic shir, and hashkafic shir, and we had a chance to talk and learning a little bit of very nice experience. And as the conversation progressed, we continued talking about other things, and we started talking about Gedolei Dor. Interesting conversation. One of the guys made a comment, that the Gedolim of our generation are just not the same as the previous generation. They're not the same Gedolim. The Gedolim we have is not the same as the Gedolim of yesteryear. It used to be they were real Gedolim. And I said, you know, these Gedolim are much less, tier 2 Gedolim. I said, I hear what you're saying, although to be honest, part of the system is designed to be that way. Meaning, one of the things we believe in is Yiridus HaDoros, and part of Yiridus HaDoros means, you know, the Gedolim of our generation are just a notch shy of the previous Gedolim. So the same way you could ask around, you know, where the Rav Moshe Feinstein's in our generation, where the Rabbi Soloveitchik's, where the Rav Cutler's of Aaron Cutler, whether the, you know, Rav Kamenetsky, Rav Bubner. Where are these Gedolim in our generation? In fact, if you lived in their generation, if you lived in the 80s, in the 70s, if in the previous generation, you'd ask around, where's Rav Chaim Moser, and where's the Chafetz Chaim, and where's Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and where are the Gedolim in Europe? If you went back to the just before World War II in Europe, you look around, you see Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and the Netziv, and the Chafetz Chaim, and these Gedolim. You look back and say, where's Rav Akiva Eiger? You look back and say, where's the Pnei Yeshua? Where's the Gra? Where are the Gedolim from the previous few generations ago? And if you look in times of those Gedolim, you look around and say, where's the Mechaber? Mechaber, you look back and say, where is the Zvah, the Ramban? And the point is, almost every generation, I skipped a few generations. The Mechaber means the author, but when you say the word Mechaber, usually referring to Yosef Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch. What the heck is that guy doing there? Yeah, in any event, So there really is this, I think, built into the system is we're supposed to. And, you know, look at our Gedolim. Not that it's not a true point, but we're supposed to recognize our Gedolim is great, but a step below the previous generation, and that's how the world always works. Again, not just that we look that way, but how it is. We look at our generation, that's why I told him back. I responded to him that saying, it's true, we're looking at Gedolim, but, you know, don't feel bad. It's always been this way historically speaking. And he responded by saying, you're right. However, he thinks we jumped 2 levels down. In other words, if every generation would take 1 step down, for this generation we took 2 steps down. Meaning the gap between our Gedolim and the other Gedolim, and the previous generation's Gedolim, he thinks is significantly greater, maybe twice as great, as the other gaps from generation to generation. At which point I said, I agree with you. I think the lack of godless Torah in this world has taken a larger step down. The Yerida took place much more quickly. It usually would take place, I don't know, over 150 years of Yerida Torah took place in 20 or 30 years. I agree to the point. And then he asked me, why do you think it is? So I, before I answered him, I did have a theory, which I'll show you in a second. I said, why do you think it is? He said, he doesn't know why. If anything, he thinks the Gedolim of our generation know just as much Torah as the Gedolim of the previous generation, so it's really surprising to him. Meaning, he thinks that if you test, I guess, I don't know who's right to test, but if Hashem would write a test and test the Gedolim, who know more Torah, so our generation's Gedolim would pass with the same flying colors, with the same good grades as anybody else. That's what he had suggested. I happen to agree with him. And by the way, let's pause for a second and tell you two unbelievable stories that really represent it. I once heard, some they're both true, about Rabbi Yashiv. One time Rabbi Yashiv was asked, how many times did he say the word Moshe in the Chumash? He said, I don't know, the number 635, let's just say, I don't know the exact number. And they put it in the Bar Ilan. You know, they came out 637, he was off by two. But did you miss two? He goes, no, I didn't. The computer did. Take a look carefully. One says, Mishor u Miseh, Mem, Sin, Hey. And the computer doesn't know the difference between Miseh and Moshe. And the other one also. I mean, I was so impressed with the story. Not only did he count it up right, like, you know, in a snap, but the other two times, he caught the computer. I was like, so impressed. It was really impressive. I don't even dream to know Torah that well. Then I heard another story, which is even more impressive, Rav Yosef. I don't know if it's true, but if it is, it's unbelievable. Rav Yosef is once asked, how many times does the following halakhic principle come up in this farm? He starts going through, he thinks for a while, he says 71. They put it in the bar line, they go through
shit.
Whatever halakhic phrase, I don't know what the phrase is. When I was told the story, the person didn't know the phrase either. Some halakhic phrase. Not that, again, it comes 71 times once, and Gemara twice, and we show him 5 times here and 10 times there, and 71 times. They put it in the bar line, and it came up 73 times. They said to him, he made a mistake. And again, he said, no, it's not true. I didn't count my own two sparim. If you look at the bar line, one is the Abia Omer, one is the Chavadat. It's just so unbelievable. It's not 73, it's 71. It's just so unbelievable. And again, even if these stories aren't true, the fact that, like, people can confuse them for being true, is already says it's true. Now the Torah of Adjusif has his fingertips. You read his Chuvas, and he's just so unbelievably impressed. He just has thousands and thousands of sheep. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of sheep is memorized. The amount of, again, and it's not just a walking encyclopedia, it's things also. But the amount of Torah, the Gedolim, so taking all into account, I said, I agree with you, the Gedolim know a tremendous amount today. And not just those two Gedolim, there are many, many other Gedolim that know a tremendous amount also. It's just, and I know these two stories, and they came to my mind. So I'll tell you what I think the Yerida has taken place. I'm not critiquing the Gedolim, far be it for me to say that, that if I were one of the Gedolim, I'd be doing it the right way. That's so misunderstanding. But I'll tell you where I think the Yerida took place, and I told it to him, and he agreed. I think it's an important hashkafic perspective to have. I explained to him, I think that the world is going through a transformation from Slobodka to Mir. Yeah. No one has what that even means. I'll let you explain that, what I mean by that. From Slobodka to Mir. There were two major Musar yeshivas. One was Slobodka and one was Navarin. The difference between the two yeshivas was really, they both focused a lot on Musar, so I can't say it's night and day, but the hashkafic differences were tremendous. In other words, there was a different hashkafic mindset by each of these places. Slobodka, everything was about godless ha'adam. Everything was about the godless, the greatness, the confidence, what's the word I'm looking for, the dignity of man. You walk in, you felt mouthless. The Altamist Slobodka really represented this. And you know, saying the hashkafic mindset was, people have tzelem elokim, the halachta b'drachav, you should walk in the ways of Hashem. The biggest aver you can do in Slobodka was katnus hadas, something foolish, something silly, something stupid. Because if man really represents God, could you imagine God doing something silly, something foolish, something stupid? People were calm, collected, they were in control of themselves. wise. Better to answer something wise than not answer. Better not to answer than to say something stupid. There was a real sense, you know, of just tremendous, tremendous. Again, arrogance would be too strong of a word, but like, we are the children of Hashem. We are the princes in Hashem's palace. I'll describe it with Rav Huttner for a second. Rav Huttner is a real great example of this Lubavitcher mindset. Rav Huttner used to walk around wearing $700 suits. This is in the 80s, 70s, 60s. Nowadays, it's $1,500 suits. Shirt was always pressed. Never, like, you wouldn't walk around with last week's chum stained all over a shirt. And like, the antithesis of that. Rav Huttner used to walk around with a gold cane, even though he didn't need it. Rav Huttner really represented, like, a Ben Torah should be a melech in this world. A Bas Torah should be a malkah, should be a prince, a princess, king, a queen, whatever. In Rav Huttner's office, if you wanted to leave, this is unbelievable, you had to walk out back and like, away from the kotel. Did I say walk back from Gadol? Not because he's a Baal Gaiva, and he didn't walk. That's his walk away from Moshe Yeshiva, from the Gadol Torah. And more than that, if he didn't walk away the right way, he wouldn't open the door. There was a little buzz, a little button under his desk that would unlock the door. And that's how he walked away from Gadol Torah. He made you walk away backwards. And again, I'll try my best to explain why it's not an arrogance, and I'm a little bit of proof. There's a story where one of the governors of New York, one of the mayors of New York City, I don't know which one it was, invited Rav Huttner and Rav Moshe Feinstein to his Gracie Mansion, right? There where Elvis lives. Where's Elvis live? Grace lives where Elvis lives. Gracie Mansion, I'm sorry, yeah, correct, that was right. Gracie Mansion is, something like an idiot. Gracie Mansion, I think, is where the mayor lives in New York City, something like that. East Side, maybe like an 85th Street or something like that. And I don't know, somewhere on the Upper East Side. He invited Rav Huttner, who was a major Rosh Yeshiva in Brooklyn, and Chaim Berlin, and Moshe Feinstein, a yeshiva in Manhattan, in the bottom of the island, the Lower East Side. And Rav Huttner said, there is no, it's just totally not respectful for people like me and you to have anything but us go to visit Moshe Feinstein. Meaning, that was his personality. His personality was, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol, you and I go to him. He put himself in the mayor's category, and Rav Moshe in a different category, opposed to him in Rav Moshe in a category. He just felt that. It wasn't about himself. It's just, this is how Gadol Torah should be treated. I just happen to be Big Talmid Chacham. Not arrogant. But that's how people should, the whole sense. If you ever see Chevron, the Chevron Yeshiva, a real sense of dress properly. The hat's on the right way. The tie is done properly. The shirt is clean. There's a real sense of representing Hashem in this world. This is also about this. Navardic was the exact opposite. Navardic was, I'm nothing, I'm worthless. And the different mindset was in Slobodka, you can be so great. How could you lower yourself this day? Look how great Jews are, look how great mankind is, look how great B'nai Adam are. You have fellow Elohim in you. Don't lower yourself this day. And Navardic was the exact opposite style of Moshe, which is, you're nothing but nothing. You're a garnish. How dare you have the chutzpah to sin? You think you're so great? You think you're so unbelievable? You're nothing. How dare you have the chutzpah to sin? Navardic is a little bit more sophisticated than that, but I really want to focus on Slobodka. Slobodka, I think, was a tremendous, tremendous dream and vision, a sense of individuality. And I'm just going to give you appreciation. Yeah, I remember so I was talking to a friend of mine, a Rebbe of mine, we were both, but Binyamin Blau from Cleveland. He once had suggested to me, why is it that all the Gedolei Torah came out of Slobodka and none came out of Navardic? Or not none, but very few. There were a couple came out of Navardic. I'll tell you who came out of Slobodka in a minute. But Ruba de Ruba, the overwhelming majority of huge Rabbanim, huge Gedolei Torah, came out of Slobodka. And the point was very simple. When you train people, they can be great. When you tell people they can be unbelievable, they believe you. When you tell someone you're a garnish, when you tell someone you're nothing, we tell someone when you break down their confidence, supposed to build it up, they believe you as well. And just to give you appreciation of who came out of Slobodka, so the author of Slobodka is Avnasin C. Finkel, who's out of Slobodka, a son named Laser, of Eliezer Yehuda of Laser Finkel. There's a man named Moshe Mordechai Epstein, who was Rashi in Knesset Yisrael in Hebron until 1929, from which he moved to Bayi Bagan. The son named Rav Avram Eliyahu Kaplan, who's Rashi of Helmerstein Yeshiva in Germany. Rav Aaron Kotler learned there from Lakewood. Rav David Leibowitz, who's Rashi of Chaim in Queens. Rabbi Ruderman learned there from Baltimore, from Yisrael. Rav Yecheskel Sarna learned there from Hebron in Yerushalayim. Rav Reuven Kozlovsky lived there. Rav Yitzchak Sher was Rav Shiva Slavatsky in Brisk. Rav Simcha Wasserman started Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Rav Yaakov Kamesky started Torah Das in Brooklyn. Rav Yitzchak Krumi started Chaim Berlin. Rav Yichiel Yaakov Weinberg, where she was a Sweden Yesh. The list goes on and on and on. And actually, in my own, you know, under Talmidim, the amount of Gedolei Torah that came out of Slavatka is off the charts. It's almost everyone except for the Soloveitchiks who go with the same mindset. And the more you give someone this mindset of you're great and you can be successful and you can achieve and you're wonderful, the more they grow into it. In any event, that's what Slobodka was. I think a lot of that is being lost. And just to sharpen a little bit and give you appreciation of one more story. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky tells a story that when the Altami Slobodka had Yeruchim Lavavitz come over, the Altami Slobodka was the Mashkiach in Slobodka and Yeruchim Lavavitz was the Mashkiach in Mir. And as he invited him over, so Yaakov Kamenetsky was one of the Talmidim of the Yeshiva at the time, he and Aaron Cutler, he was one of the Talmidim at the time. And Aaron Cutler says, I'm sorry, Yaakov Kamenetsky rather says he had never in his life seen anyone manhandled, anyone abused the way Rabbi Yeruchim Lavavitz was at the hands of the Alter. So the Alter, Mr. Vodka, was screaming and yelling and attacking, not physically, but verbally, viciously. Just ripping and ripping and ripping. Because we've never seen the author scream so much and so loud at one man. And you wonder, what did Rabbi Yeruchim Lavavitz do to deserve it? And the author, Mr. Butler, was yelling, the way you raise Talmidim are like cookie cutter model. Put them in the oven, they all come out the same. There's no sense of individuality. There's no sense of me being who I am. It's all collectivism. It's all, you know, uniformity. You have to have individual thinkers their own way. And if you look, by the way, if you look from Slobodka, they were different in the way they learned. They were different in the way they thought. The Pachad Yitzchak of Hutler Sefer is different from the Emes Yaakov. They have different hashkafas. They have different ways of thinking. And all these yeshivas, every one of the mainstream yeshivas, the Shul and the Yeshiva Shul, they all came out of Slobodka with different ideologies and nuances and difference of thought and difference of personality. And the Altami Slobodka sets of Yeruchim. You're crippling the people. You're damaging their Tzelem Elohim. And it's a Chilul Hashem. He was so much into Tzelem Elohim means Hashem gives a little bit different. Makes us each other, he gives a little bit of himself into us, whatever that means. There's a little bit of godliness in us. And each of us looks different. The Chazal said we have different faces because we're supposed to represent different things. And we shouldn't all try to identify, try to put yourself in the box and try your best to wear the mask that the from world wears. You should grow into who yourself. You should be from, you should be committed, you should be dedicated. You should be an individual. You should use the strengths and kochos God gave you. And the Altamist of Lovka thought that Yeruchim of Lovka wasn't doing this properly. I told over the story to these guys, you know, and they know the story anyway, but I told it nonetheless. I like that one. And I think the point I'm trying to share is that, what I said to him, is that it's true that the Gedolim know a tremendous amount of Torah, have Torah at their fingertips in literally mind-blowing, incredible ways, unbelievable. And I mean unbelievable in a little sense. It's difficult to believe it, not just in the wow, it's a really cool thing. It's literally mind-boggling how much the Gedolim nowadays know. But I think as the world shifted from Slobodka to Mir, and there are many advantages to it, people stay a lot firmer when they're all the same. You have to finish that balance of stability and some kind of planting your feet deep in the ground and making sure you make firm. With this whole other element of godless Torah, which is beyond the knowledge of them. This whole other dimension of godless Torah, which is not just how many sheets you can memorize and who knows more, Rashbam's on Chumash and Ramban's on Chumash and Balamaris and Melchanis's and, you know, on Gemara. I guess for boys who are more into Gemara. For boys, we've shown them in Achronim. For girls, it's probably more Nefarshim on Chumash and knowledge. It's good to know a lot. It really is. You should know a lot. But you should also realize that that's one of the dimensions of Godless Torah. Godless Torah. And if we're not going to become Gedolim over here, probably, although, you know, the sky's the limit and go for it. But, you know, the odds of anyone here, especially if there's a girl becoming the next Posek Hadar, I would say are small. But godless the Torah and the impact Torah can have on you beyond the memorization of opinions, beyond the thought process that goes through it, It should be eye-opening. It should take your religious horizon and expand it. It should give you the confidence to think as an individual within a framework of the thought of the Masoba. It should enable you, the more direction you have, because of Torah, the more confidence you have, the more direction in general in life, the more confident you are. The more one can use Torah to build themselves, not just like in high school, Torah is like often used as a hook to make sure you stay firm. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, the goal is to allow Torah not just to unshackle you, to grow as great as you can. Chazal say, Ein bein chorin el misho seik Torah. The only person who is truly free is someone who is osek involved in Torah. And the question is obviously, what are you talking about? First glance, Torah is so restricting. Torah is so confining. Torah is like an anchor. It anchors me down. I can't do what I want. I can't eat what I want. I can't touch what I want. I can't see what I want. I can't think what I want. It's tremendously confined. It's tremendously restricted. I believe the truth is when Chazal say Ein bein chorin el misho seik Torah, 100% correct. I went to the work from Rabbi Garrison, who teaches here in the hotel as well. I have more of a relationship with himself. He suggested, it's funny, on Pesach time we celebrate Chavis. What are we trying to celebrate? Why does God care about Chavis? Why is that a religious value? I can understand Zman Matan Torah saying that's a really important time. And for each of us personally to do another Kabbalah HaTorah. And Zman Simcha Seinu of Sukkot, to take Simcha, maybe to take the Simcha that exists and to channel to focus it towards God. I can see Rosh Hashanah time being a day about Malchus, where you recognize Hashem is the Melech of Kol Ha'aretz. And Yom Kippur, a day where you're supposed to recognize that you want to do Tshuva, you want to be Tahor, you want to throw yourself into God, just be cleansed with it. But why does God care that we have a day designated where we feel freedom? Chavis. Did anyone really feel that they were just in the triumph, like the mitzvah? In other words, to feel like you just left Egypt, you yourself. Iluata Yatim in the Shrine. That's the Marai from Sach, and that the Rambam has probably a different presentation, but essentially it's the same. But Targum explains there's two different words in Hebrew. One is Cheres and one is Chofshiyot. Chofesh and Cheres. Chofesh means vacation. The Gemara and Shabbos writes, when you die, it's a wonderful thing because you're Chofesh from mitzvahs. You no longer have responsibility to do that. Chavis is not freedom the way we translate it in English. English freedom means no responsibility, no rules, no regulations, no limitations. Freedom of thought, freedom of action without any boundaries, without any limitations. Chavis is what I tag this thing, but everyone explains this thing. He just contrasted the chavis. He just contrasted chavis to the chokshiyot. Chavis is the ability to see how Torah can impact your life. Cheres is the ability to unshackle yourself from living a meaningless life without direction. The ultimate direction in life is towards Hashem. The ultimate direction of where you're going in life is based on Torah mitzvah. The ultimate way of feeling you're doing something and really doing something accomplishing with your life is Mizrach Hashem. And therefore, Ein bein chorin el misho seik Torah means if you want to generally feel free, emanciated from meaningless, petty, purposeless life, the Torah is the best way of doing that. It could be here we are, spending this experience here, a year or two, whatever, is in seminary. For those of us who are one, those of us who are going back, those of us who are doing elsewhere, whatever else, those of us considering a second year, whatever stage we're at in life. To enable the Torah we learn to be more than just an education, but to be empowered. It could be this whole other dimension of the Gedolim the previous generation had. God was the Torah to not just shape, not just to give you knowledge, and not even just to shape, but to shape in godliness, in a large, great, broad-minded, sophisticated way. I believe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a sophisticated being. His Sefer, Chumash, his book is a sophisticated book. And to gain from it in a sophisticated way is the best way of gaining from it. There's an interesting Avodah Zarah, Amiri, in Pekiyavas. He writes, why is it such a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah? There are different theories to such a question. We don't have Yetzer Hara anymore. So there are different theories to it. One of them is in the Iri in the Avodah Zarah, he writes, people want to worship what they see. People want a life without question. People want, there's not a particular goal and past that point already, just an outgrowth to that point. People want a life without question. People want a shallow, simple, answers to all their questions in life. And sometimes the truth about life is that you can learn to feel comfortability. You can learn to feel confidence in what you're doing, not necessarily without all the answers. I want something to salvation. You know, Judaism can't give you all the answers, but it can teach you how to live comfortably with the question. I'm not sure if everyone agrees with that, but I definitely think from that I have experienced. And I think seeing the layers, appreciating Torah in a sophisticated way, not looking for a shallow, short way out, not looking to memorize, the 10 quick steps to becoming the next Tom Big, the Gadol Hadar. The next 10 quick steps to becoming a firm person. You know what I'm saying? The quick, short, easy patent, the short, easy, shortcut way out of not, of like, you know, accomplishing your goal without getting into the depth of it. I think very often people fall into that trap of looking for the short way of accomplishing religious greatness. People make the mistake of thinking, well, if I just do the following 10 things, 5 things, if I make a list, I get a long enough skirt, I put along the right tzanua shirt, I say mamish and baruch Hashem, and amazing, which also became a fun girl's word, with the right excited accent, and all of a sudden everything is set. Sometimes the superficial Judaism is the most easy one to attain and the least worthwhile to attain. I'm not suggesting people shouldn't wear tzanua skirts and tzanua shirts, that's for sure you should do. And I'm not saying you shouldn't say Baruch Hashem. You shouldn't replace how you really think. But once there's a Blachman, Rabbi Yavin tells a story that he was a comment of the Putner. And the Putner was asking, how are you doing? And he responded, Baruch Hashem. And Rabbi Blachman said, the Putner looked at me with disgust. And said, I ask you how you're doing, not if you're full. You want to say Baruch Hashem, I'm doing well. Say Baruch Hashem, unfortunately, I'm not doing so well. Tell me how you're doing. I'm asking you a question, how you're doing. It's so easy just to give these jaded, meaningless catchphrase lines. Baruch Hashem, you know what that means? I didn't tell you anything, I just said Baruch Hashem. I'm good, I'm not good, I'm having a good day, having a bad day, life is good, life is not good. I've had the greatest epiphany in the world and my whole life has changed. Baruch Hashem. Things are the exact same thing, oh, Baruch Hashem. You know, the answer I'm saying is, I'm just giving, you don't need to tell someone how you're doing. If you're sad, respond, say, Baruch Hashem, I'm sad, life is tough. But God, that's how God did it. This sometimes need for a quick fix, a quick, shallow lack of appreciation of deep Judaism, you fall into that trap. You fall into that mistake, I think, very often. Opposed to by a friend of mine, Rabbi Bolton, I told him that some last week, I told him this little story, I really liked it. People know it's a well-known story. The Chafetz Chaim had next to his bed a packed-up suitcase, ready in case Mashiach would come. So someone went to Rabbi Bolton and said, I want to pack up a suitcase as well. Rabbi Bolton pointed out, he goes, any idiot can pack a suitcase. The godless of the Chafetz Chaim was not that he packed up a suitcase. The godless was that he really thought Mashiach was coming any second. It was a deep emotional dream. He really connected to the concept of Tzipisa Yeshua. Sometimes in our generation, we find ourselves looking for the shortcut, the firm kite, the short 1-2-3 magic trick to accomplish whatever we're looking for. And unfortunately, deep, profound commitment to Avodah Hashem requires a deep, profound effort to get there. Just to make sure, I do think it's connected to what I said about the Gedolim thing, but I want to make sure I don't think the Gedolim nowadays are that profound. I'm just saying the ones the previous generation had a uniqueness in the godless Torah. I think the Slobodka mindset has a tremendous dimension to it. Again, I think there's a balance between Slobodka and the Varek, and this is more important balance than what I'm talking about today, Slobodka and Mir. The Mir keeps people from. Sometimes, the downsides of uniforms is that they create uniformity. The advantage of uniformity is that keeps people for the most part in check. The disadvantage is that it takes out their legs, it undermines their ability for individualism and individuality. For Tzelem Elokim to reflect itself differently in each one. And this conversation I had with these two Bnei Torah, Rabbanim, gentlemen, whatever you want to call them, on the airplane, just got me to think and to reiterate the values of Torah that sometimes get overlooked, of godless to Torah far beyond memorizing Shefer, but to impact a person, to enable a person to grow and to see with perspective in life, to gain a deep, sophisticated, broad-minded, yet well-rooted appreciation of the world through the prism of Torah. Have a good week.